Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, this has been quite a week for us. Just amazing. Just trying to stay focused and do what needs to be done. And doing some of the things, you know. But listen, we must stand up and fight back. Michigan One Fair Wage is on a mission, along with myself, to make sure that every single working person in Michigan can take care of themselves and their families. We want to raise the minimum wage. Right now it's $9.25 an hour. We want to raise it to $12. For all workers. And here's the reason. Why don't we go to $15 an hour? The reason you say that, because you don't have a clue who you're dealing with. We're dealing with a monster. We're dealing with people who really don't care about you. So we have to go out and show these people. We went out and got 400,000 signatures. 400,000 in the state of Michigan. To show them that the people care. Our goal now is to have a million signatures of people talking about this $12 an hour right now. I know that you want $15. I know you can't live off of $12 an hour, but we must make sure that we understand who we're up against. See, you have to know who your enemy is. And a lot of times, we don't know who our enemy is because we don't know who we are. We're lost. We're so busy fighting with each other over everything. We'd rather fight with each other than fight with the real enemy because we're intimidated by the real enemy. You see, I cannot sit here and believe that there's 400 people in this country making $97,000 an hour, and they don't want to pay the people $15 an hour. And people are not mad with the 400 that's making $97,000 an hour. They don't want you to have $15 an hour. They don't want you to have $12 an hour. You know, and to me, it's a sin to get out there and work 40 hours in a week and not be paid a living wages while the corporations are on welfare, receiving all kind of tax breaks. 14 million children live below the poverty level. If you look at it through the lens of those at or below the 200% of the poverty level, it's the children. 30 million children. Over 3.5 million are black. Wow. 4 million. Latinos, 5 million are white. We don't complain. There are 58 million United States workers earning below $15 an hour. But we have 400 families that's making $97,000 an hour. And we say nothing. Wow. It's a sin not to pay someone a living wage. It's a sin, and we got to change the way we think. You know, on yesterday, I was with Minister Louis Farrakhan in Chicago at a breakfast, and he was speaking. He was saying some remarkable things. I mean, the man is 85 years of age and still out there on the battlefield and have a very, very sound mind, and he's my friend. And people have came to not like him for any reason, because we always find a reason not to like each other. Because once again, we don't know who we are. We don't like ourselves. That's why we hate on each other so much. But hey, let me talk about the bait truck that was put out in the city of Chicago. I'm going to read it, what it says from the final call. Blocking the bait truck. They have what they call a bait truck that they put Nike gym shoes in. And what they do, they say it's by the Chicago police and the feds, I believe they're saying who it is behind this. And they have a whole truck full of the brand new Nike gym shoes. And what they normally do, they arrest the driver right in front of everybody. They park the truck in front of an area that's maybe one of around a basketball court or by a park, and they have the driver of the truck to go to the back of the truck, open the truck up, and show them what's in the truck. And they have these brand new Nike gym shoes. I'm thinking the whole truck is full of Nike gym shoes. I can't tell you for sure, but there was a guy who streamlined it and followed that truck and saw exactly what happened. But here there was a rapper, Victor Mensah, I believe that's how you pronounce his name. It's M-E-N-S-A. And he's a local rapper from Chicago. See, and here what he did. According to the final call, it says the line stretched around three blocks in West Englewood neighborhood on the south side of Chicago. Thousands of people, men, women, and children, waited hours in the offensive heat, humidity, for a chance to walk away with a brand new pair of free sneakers, Nikes, being given away by the local rapper. The anti-bait truck shoe giveaway came in response to a sting operation set up by the Chicago Police Department in the very same neighborhood, using seemingly unoccupied semi-truck trailers filled with expensive sneakers that was left open to try and lure people into seeing what was inside and taking something out of that truck so they could be arrested and charged with theft. Operation was a joint effort between the Chicago Police and Norfolk Southern, with the official narrative being to combat freight theft from the train yard in the Englewood neighborhood. Ironically, it is always retail merchandise stolen out of the locked container, but also guns, ammunition that contribute to the violence seen in many of Chicago and Paris communities. In fact, this is what happened. Since Englewood, what they do, when guns is coming in on the train, they notify certain gangs, and they don't, you know, what they do, they do it one gang at a time. Maybe this time be the, I don't know what they call themselves, the Blackstone Rangers no more. But what, you know, whatever, you know, they start with them because they're one of the oldest gangs in Chicago. And then they go to the Gangster Disciples, and they bring these guns in on the freight, and the whole thing be loaded with guns. And the freight is open, and they are able to go in there and get the guns out. Everything that they have, but here they made one mistake one time. They had some grenades inside these trucks. And what happened was, they didn't intend for them to take the grenades. So they called the leader up on the phone and told him to bring the grenades back unless they was going to arrest them. So if you bring the grenades back, we won't arrest you. So they knew the guy telephoning them and everything. So you tell me what's going on. I believe that they have paid assassins in Chicago and infiltrating these gangs. I do not believe for one second that we can go around killing people just to be killing them. I don't believe that. You may think otherwise, but I just, it's not in my heart to think on this level that we have actually people, because we're such a loving group of people. Well, we used to be. We loved. I mean, everything was surrounded by love, and now it's a whole new world. We hate each other. because we don't have the same shoe. We wear different hats. We want to sell drugs in this area. We want to do this. We want to put that poison in our community, and you don't want me to have that poison in your community. Now I'm going to kill you. All kind of stuff. But we have to change. We have to change the way we do business. We're loving people, and we have to continue to be loving. We have to continue to care about each other. We have to continue to stand tall with each other and stop fighting each other. You're not my enemy. I could not dislike you, but I could dislike your spirit. You can have a bad spirit in you, and I don't have to like that spirit, but I still love you. Listen, let me bring in my guest, the man of the hour, a man of love, someone who's special to me, and been knowing him for years now. His wife, his baby girl, and you know what? And have formed a relationship. This is a man of love, and I like for everybody to listen to him. I love having him on my show because I know that people are going to be listening to this man talk. They want to find something wrong with his language, but it's unfortunate for them. They cannot. My good friend, my guy, Malik. Or is it Malak?
How you doing, Pastor Penny? You always say my name wrong.
Look, it's Malak. I got you. My man, Malak, okay?
My man.
How you doing, my brother?
Man, I'm blessed, man. How you doing?
Man, I'm doing great, man. I got a chance to see some of those pictures. Some of the things that you was doing and amazing, you know, and I just love it, you know, and I want you to keep up all the good work and just do what you got to do. Stay focused, because remember this, you always going to have haters out there. It don't make no difference, but I love it, though, because you get a chance to educate them. And I think you can't ask for no more than that, because that's part of your job. Are you there, my brother?
I didn't get in this. You know, I know this job was hard when I took it. You know, it's going to be a lot of people that when the truth comes out, they're going to take it as, you know, they're going to take it in a negative way instead of a positive way. And so that, you know, that's how the Most High pick his soldiers. You know, you got to be able to go against the grain. You know, he pulls you out of the world. The world is all doing something different from you.
Absolutely. And you know what? What thing? You know, it comes with the territory. You see, when you're in a position like you in, there's nothing more important than standing tall. Because one thing I learned about people, when you're doing something good, they always find a reason not to like you. And if they can help it, they will do exactly that. They, you know, because that's their nature. You know, the devil is always busy. You know, he got a job to do just like everybody else. You know, he got
his
job. That's right. If he can find a way to catch you sleeping, you know, he's going to do exactly that, you know. We're living in the time. I was in Chicago on yesterday, and we had what we call breakfast with the minister, and he got a chance to speak, and he went down there through there. He, you know, he told these pastors or some of the things, and he said something that was so important that I'd like for you to hit on this too, just for a second if you can. He talked about at the beginning, and Moses is the writer of the Genesis. And he's the guy, but tell us how, or give me your thoughts on Moses writing the book of Genesis, and he actually was not there. Can you hit on that just for a second, and then we can go to what you need to talk about.
Okay, that's great, and that's a great question, because he mm-hmm. didn't just write Genesis, he wrote the first five books of
Absolutely.
The Old Testament. Now, mm-hmm. remember, a lot of things was taking place with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, but then when we got to Moses, Moses went up into the mountains for 40 days and 40 nights, just like mm-hmm. Christ had fasted. And when he came down, the Most High had showed him everything. And so what he did, he just wrote everything down that the Most High told him to write down. And that's how we got the first five books, because the Most High dealt with him directly to give us that information. You know what I mean? You,
absolutely.
You get it?
Oh, yeah. I definitely get it. I want the listeners to hear this, because a lot of times people just don't know. You know, well, how could he possibly have written the first five books, and he wasn't there in the beginning?
It's just like when, you know, we tell stories today about our lifetime, or and somebody, you know, a lot of authors write books about other people. You know, they wasn't
right.
there, but they did all the research, and what they do is just compile it all together, and they create a book. But mm-hmm. the difference between them and Moses is Moses was talking directly with the Most High. The Most High was giving him his divine order, his divine presence, his divine everything for him to be able to write everything down so we would be able to have it today. The Bible was actually created because our people kept messing up so much that the Most
mm-hmm.
High had to write it down so you wouldn't have no excuse no more. So this is why we get punished so harsh by going into the lake of fire, is because he wrote it down. So you could call me Malik, 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 but then when I write it down and you see Malak and then everybody
mm-hmm.
else calling me something different, then
uh-huh.
we can always go back to what was actually written and say, okay, it's Malak now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's
mm-hmm.
what the Most High wanted. He didn't want us to have no excuses. He didn't want them to say, well, I don't have anything to go by. You know, my father told me this, but I might have forgot. So he's like, let's just write it down. You ain't got no excuses. Now you're going to be held accountable because I wrote it down for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? That is so amazing, because when you think about the work that Moses was done, and even though he wasn't given permission to go into the promised land, Moses was somebody special. He was, he was a deliverer, you know, and he just wasn't what they call an everyday guy, you know. He was one of the chosen ones. He was chosen, you see, out of all
what
of that.
Was so special, what was really special about Moses' story, remember when Moses was getting, when he was born, they was trying to kill Moses. Killing all the male children, trying to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he ended up, his mother put him on a raft. They ended up, the Egyptians got him, brought him inside the house, and he lived as an Egyptian his whole life. And then
Absolutely.
He ended up finding out that, wait a minute, I'm a Hebrew Israelite, and I
mm-hmm.
got to go and save my people from out of this bondage. And it's the same thing with us. Like, we've been living a whole nother life, not understanding who we are, and we've been going by all of their rules and all their culture and all of their ways. But then we end up finding out that we're something different, and then the same place that we've been living the whole time, we got to kind of tear it down because it's not of the Most High.
Absolutely. And let me say this too. We still got a lot of people who want to live that way other than the right way. We have so many people who want to be just like the enemy. You know, they want to be like these people. And if you tell them something different, they do not want to listen to that, because, you know, most of them might walk around here with 4 or 5 degrees and when, you know, and now they figure that they're equal to them in their sight, but not their sight. You see, in your own sight, you think you're equal, but in reality, they think you're way below them, even though it's just like one of the things I found out, and I found this out the hard way, because no matter how many degrees you have, if you're black, You got a white boy with a high school diploma will make just as much as more than you. And I, mm-hmm. when I looked at the stack, it kind of like blew my mind a little bit, you know. But I believe that if we stay focused and stay together, you know, we would not have to worry about these people. We need to stop worrying about them and start building inside our own community. Stop building each other up. Stop fighting with each other over nothing. Here's something, like I always say this, and I, every day now I believe this stuff more and more, how they send other black people into your community who are actually paid assassin to rob, kill, and destroy in your own in our community. They may not originally be from there, but they come in and they do this because they don't know who they are. We have to teach them. Let's talk about what you want to talk about today, because I tell you, I'm just enjoying you just here.
No, I like this topic that we on right now, because you know the thing about it is that we got to understand our self-worth, and that's a part of us losing our identity when we came into slavery. When we came into slavery, we lost everything. So we don't know who we are, and we don't know what we're capable of. And so we're the biggest consumers in the world, right? But, mm-hmm. but what do? We work for everybody else. But when we work for everybody else, we become the supervisor, the manager, the new person just came in. We're doing everybody's job. And so why couldn't we be taking on all those different hats, how come we couldn't get our own business and do the same thing that we've been trained to do at your job? And that's what our group is doing right now. We all transferring all of our energy into working for ourselves and not working for others, and building and showing them and empowering them, saying you can do it, because it's a step of faith, because we get so caught up working for somebody else that we afraid to try to do it on our own, because I might mess up, I might not have, you know, be able to pay my rent, take care of my family. But this is what the Most High is here for. When we stand with Him and we have faith. Faith is something that's unseen. You have to do the unbelievable things when you know that the Most High is on your side. And so absolutely. This is what we are empowering our people to do, but we directing them in the right way, because a lot of white people, when they get ready, or the other nations, I should say, when they get ready to get their own businesses, they don't save up their money and get their own business. They go and get a business loan.
Right.
And this
absolutely.
Is what's been stopping us for so long on getting our businesses, because they don't want to give us the loan, right? They don't want to give
absolutely.
Us the resources to have the things that we need in our community. But remember, the Most High is all powerful. And so what we have done, we have found a way to get through all of that so we can get our finances now. And then we can help. I can get the finances, and then I can show you how to get the finances, and we can show the next person, the next person, the next person, so we can get the community being built in our own cities. We don't have, like you was talking about, the police doing the bait trucks and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing that for a long time, because they have to meet their quota. The police was started as slave catchers. They was called
That's
the plantation
right.
police.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Or slave patrol.
Yep. And so the police was structured on capturing black people and putting them behind bars, making them slaves in a new modern day age. Right? So
right.
nothing has changed. All of the laws that they be setting up is just to put us in a trick bag so we can get caught up. It's to get the poor. So what we have to do is we have to elevate ourselves to the top. And we can do it because we have all the resources. We got the power to shut anything down. Martin Luther King showed us that when he did the bus boycott. That was the biggest thing
mm-hmm.
he could have ever done, because he
absolutely.
Shut that whole bus system down. Now the bus system is fighting for their freedom now.
Absolutely.
He was like, man, we ain't trying to lose our business.
That's
hey,
right.
We fighting for them now.
And you know, you said something too, because we don't understand the power that we have. and especially you talk to these our black folks and try to get them in line, they always go, that won't work today. Why won't it work? You don't know what will work until you try it. And here's the thing. God did not give you the spirit of fear. I don't know how we're so fearful of the enemy, but we're not fearful of each other. If I step on your toe, you're ready to kill me. And then you walk around here with a size 15 shoe up your butt and ain't not saying a mumbling word. And it's got a white foot. But this is what we do. We're ready to fight and kill each other. And the thing is, we need to start. And remember this now, when we talk about business, black folks had business. We had business. When I grew up on the west side of Chicago, all the stores in that area was black. There was no, the drugstore was even black. We had the grocery store was black. Everything was black on the west side of Chicago. And this was more of when we moved over there, it was more of a middle class area, which, like my dad, he always thought of taking his children to a whole different level. That was his way of thinking and showing. But he wanted also us to be able to go into business for ourselves, be more business minded. That was his thing. That was his way of thinking. But I know myself. I know that the best thing that you can do, own your own business and not have to work for someone else. It might be a struggle, but also what you're doing there is teaching your children, you know, because there's a way. Because nowadays our children are not taught to be business owners. They're taught to work for other people. I want a job. I want a career or business. That's what I want. I don't want no job.
Exactly. Exactly. And see, you know, I was actually born in Oklahoma, and my family was a part of the Black Wall Street. Mm-hmm. And remember when we did, that was in 1921.
Yeah.
And when we had all our own businesses or our schools, they said a dollar would go 13 times to 13 different businesses before black owned businesses before it would actually go out to the other nation. The mm-hmm. president of the United States, he actually dropped a bomb in the middle of that city because he didn't want us to have our own resources and stuff. Then they sent the lynch mob in to hang, kill, and murder innocent women and men, women, and children, right? So now what we got to do is we got to rebuild this. This is my mission, is to rebuild that structure that was broken down, because every other nation have this, either Chinese, the Japanese, and they coming over here having it. You got a Chinatown, you got a Koreatown, you got all these different towns you got, but our town is the ghetto town where we don't have nothing. You know what I'm saying? They got their own banks, they got their own resources, they got their own language on the building. You know what I'm saying? You can't even read what it say, because they got this is only catered to them. And so now when we sit up here and we talk about catering to ourselves to build ourselves up, we so brainwashed, Brother Malak being racist. Brother Malak is this and Pastor Pinckney is that. We have to do this. If we don't do this, then the future of our children is going to be doomed. This generation right here got to make moves for our children to come. Because if we don't, the way that they setting everything up, we're gonna be right back in chains again in a minute.
Well, you know what? You know what you just said is unfortunate, because that's the way. That's the big plan. And then let me go back to us. As we're, like I said, we're so busy fighting. See, here's nothing a lot of people don't understand. 11 o'clock. Every Sunday morning is a morning where the preacher have the attention of all the people in our community. So one thing we do, we don't go to church now like we used to go. We used to go, you know, that was almost mandatory when I was growing up. that, you know, that you would go to church. But one of the things now, the pastor of the church, he's so money-driven. And I call them poverty pimps because they take advantage of you and tell you that you're going to be closer to God by coming to church and giving me all your money and not paying your rent. I got a problem with that because I believe that if you're not out in that community and doing what needs to be done, educating them to become business owners, then there's a problem. See, one of the things that the church should be doing is setting up businesses and jobs for the community. You get this money every Sunday, but you don't want to give back to the community because you figure my job is just here to take up offering all day and take care of myself and not worry about you. God gonna take care of you. Not if you're stupid, he won't. If you're stupid enough to give this man your rent money, knowing that, you know, he's not going to do anything for the community. We had a church here, Second Baptist Church here. And what they would do, they get grant money that to help people pay rent. But pay their light bill. And they won't give them the money to pay their light bill. They won't give it to them. You know,
that's horrible.
Right, and I'm talking about I'm not talking about a small amount. I'm talking about a large amount. But the point is, if you don't pressure them to do the right thing, they're not going to do it.
Yeah, so, my mother is a victim of that. My mother is a victim of that. She's been paying her tithes for so long, and then she got down and didn't want to ask me, and she went to ask the church, and they turned her down, and she got mad. But I'm like, okay, But the thing is this, Pastor Pinckney, if we study ourselves to be approved, right, this Bible tells everything, right? And so the pastors are saying, hey, man, we ain't supposed to be in the Old Testament, but they sure will go to the Old Testament to get them tithes and offerings, though.
Oh, absolutely. they'll go there in a minute. they'll go there in a minute and, you know, bring your tithes and offering to the house of the Lord, you know.
Well, okay, man, so now this is the catch. What is tithes and offerings? How was tithes and offerings set up if you're going to go take it by the Bible? Now, I'm not saying people ain't supposed to bless you, you know, because you can get blessed by other people. But the problem is when they're asking you to give it to them when they're preaching the word. They're asking you to take care of them for being a man in the Most High when the Most High himself takes care of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now
let's
go back in history, and let's find out what tithes and offering is. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 14 and 22. And I got Brother Kanaki out today as my reader.
Kanaki, how you doing today, my brother?
I'm doing good. Shalom, shalom.
My
shalom,
brother,
shalom.
It's always good to hear your voice, my brother, always.
Yes, sir, likewise. Deuteronomy 14.
22.
Deuteronomy 14, verse 22. Reads, thou shalt truly tithe all the increase of thy seed, that the field bringeth forth year by year.
So he said, you shall truly tithe the increase of the seed that the field brings up year by year.
That's right.
What is the field bringing up year by year? They bringing up crops. They bringing up food out of the ground, right? Now, remember, the Levites was stationed in all the 12 tribes of Israel. And their whole ministry, their whole duty was to cater to each tribe. So they didn't even have no land. You know what I'm saying? So we had that the tithe was going to them, and it was also going to the Most High, and they even had it set up where all the animals ate after that. But this was once a year. But let's keep going. Let's keep going, Kanaka.
Okay. And thou shalt eat before the Most High thy God in the place.
Hello?
So, yeah, Salakia. Sorry about that. In the place which he shall choose to place his name there, the tenth of thy corn, of thy wine, My phone keep going out. Of thy wine.
Mm-hmm. And of the oil.
And of the all and the firstling of thy herds and of thy flocks, that thou mayest learn to fear the Most High thy God always.
Okay, so he said, thou shalt eat before the Most High. We don't eat money. This was food, right? But we're going to get a little bit deeper. Let's get deeper. Go ahead.
And if the way be too long for thee, so that thou art not able to carry it, or if the place be too far from thee, which the Most High thy God shall choose to set his name there, when the Most High thy God have blessed thee, then shalt thou turn it into money.
We shall turn it into what?
Money.
Okay, so they had money back in those days, right? He didn't tell them to give your tithe as money. The tithe was food, but he said if it was too far for you to go, we're going to turn it into money. And then what we going to do with the money? Read.
In thine hand, and shall go into the place which the Most High thy God shall choose. And thou shalt bestow that money for whatsoever thy soul lusteth after, for oxen, or for sheep, or for wine, or for strong drink, or for whatsoever thy soul desireth. And thou shalt eat there before the Most High thy God, and thou shalt rejoice, thou and thine household, and the Levite that is within thy gates.
Now, stop right there. So he said, when you get the money and you go to the place, you buy all the stuff that you couldn't carry. So it was always food. It wasn't money. So let's go to their favorite verse. Let's go to Malachi 3 and 8. I know everybody remember this. Will a man
rob
God? This ain't favorite right here. They be like, will a man rob God? And you feel all guilty. He be like, man, I ain't going to even pay my rent today, man. I'm just going to give it to the pastor.
I'm going to get kicked out. I'm going to live on the streets.
So
this preacher can live in this mansion. Mm-hmm.
Malachi 3, verse 8. Will a man rob the Most High? Yet ye have robbed me. But ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. Ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house. All
right,
and food.
Stop right there. Stop right there. He said there's going to be what in his house?
Meat.
Okay, meat is food. They was robbing him because they wasn't bringing the food into the storehouse. The food was for the homeless, for the Levites, for the animals. You ain't even bringing the food into the storehouse. So you robbing the Most High. Now, here go the kicker, Pastor Pinkney, right here. This one going to make a lot of pastors mad right here. Because remember, when I came to Benton Harbor, I ran into a pastor. I ain't going to say no names. But I was explaining to him that we was the children of Israel, and he was on it until we got to, hey, man, you ain't supposed to be taking all this money from the congregation. Now, it's okay if everybody agreed to pay for the building and this and that, and they want to bless you with a certain amount. But when you turn around and say, I need this, I got to have this, you better give this, and you know how they be preaching. Everybody come bring the money up to the thing so I can dance on it. You in trouble. So we're going to 1 Corinthians 9 and 16.
1 Corinthians 9, verse 16. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yeah, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me.
So if I'm a preacher and I preach this willingly, I'm going to get my reward. But if I'm
really
going to do it and somebody forcing me to do it, I ain't getting nothing. Read.
That's right.
Verse 18. What is my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge.
Without what?
Charge.
Without what?
Charge.
So when we preach the gospel of the Most High, it's supposed to be free.
That's right. Mm.
Charge people to get the gospel from you. It's free. And it's in the New Testament. Ain't no running from that. It's just for the people who only believe in the New Testament, which you shouldn't, because the whole book is the book. And the disciples and Paul and everybody was writing about the Old Testament. So if you don't read the Old Testament, you ain't going to understand what he's talking about. But here we go. You have to, I mean, you do not have to give your pastor all your money. This is set up by the government. He's being paid to teach you lies. He's being paid to get rich off the congregation. He don't have to pay no taxes. He got his 501c3. He's getting paid a couple of different times, all kind of different ways, right? Now, one thing that I loved about Pastor Pinckney is when I met him, he don't get paid for what he do. This is just what he believed. This is how he fighting for you because he love you. You know what I'm saying? And then he get rewarded all the time by the Most High. People just want to bless him. When the disciples was going out and they was preaching, he said, don't even take no purse with you. He said, because everywhere you go, I'm gonna make sure you get blessed.
Wow.
They
and
wasn't
you know,
asking
right.
people for nothing. Huh?
Mm-hmm. You right there, too, because, hey, that's the holy truth right there. And, you know, a lot of times we got to understand where we at and what we need. We got to educate our people. We got to tell them what's right and what says the Lord. Because a lot of times people don't read the Bible no more. They don't read it like they should. And this is opportunity because this is going out all over the world where people are going to be hearing this and they're going to be trying to understand or maybe I shouldn't, you know. And you see, I call them poverty pimps. That's what I call them. They take advantage of you because nobody wants to go to hell, you know. And,
yeah.
and the first thing come out the mouth, if you don't pay your tithes and offering, you're going to hell, you know. Will a man rob God? Will he rob God? You know, are you robbing God by not paying your tithes and offering? Are you about to get your lights cut off, your gas cut off? You're about to be living on the street? But God will take care of you. Just pay your tithes and offering. See, that's the kind of stuff that we have to stop. We have to go out there and educate the people and just tell them the truth.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't think none could, you know, you could say anything better than that. And I'm glad you went down there through that on that because that's perfect for and it's good for the people, you know. And when you was hearing Ben Harper,
we say the churches today is destroying our community. They're
uh-huh.
not helping the community; they're destroying the community. You got a church liquor store, right? All down the street. We got like about
yeah.
1,000 churches and 1,000 liquor stores right next to each other. Why do you think that they right next to each other? Because it's spiritual destruction, and it's physical destruction. You go in
yep.
the right areas and stuff, you don't see all them churches in a row like that. They're
no.
not preaching the right thing. They're not doing the right thing. They have the power to do the right thing. If you got 3,000 members in your church, just imagine the impact that you can have on the people. You can say,
yeah.
I want 3,000 people to bring one gangbanger to church next week, right? You will have 3,000 gangbangers in the church.
Absolutely.
You
and Malak, now listen to this. And most likely the gangbanger is your son. Just bring him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And be not afraid to go into your community and try to change things. But see, when they use this 501c3 for the church, I would never use a 501c3 for a church. See, when you use it for the church, they put you in these handcuffs where you can't talk about certain things. You
mm-hmm.
can't talk about homosexuality. You have to always have your doors open for the governors, the senators, the mayors to come in on the day that you're supposed to be worshiping God, and they can come in and do a whole little seminar in your church. You know
oh,
what I'm
absolutely.
Saying? Or who gonna be the next governor or pastor? I mean, you know, senator or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
So you don't want to get handcuffed like that. Remember, if we men and women of the Most High, we got a big job to do. It's a lot of things in our community where we are needed. But guess
mm-hmm.
what? You can do it. You can change it just by talking to one person, and that person talking to another person, and that person. It can be a chain reaction of changing. We have people in our group used to be gangbangers. We got blood
mm.
and Crips in the same group. They in the same exact group, and they put all that stuff down, and they loving the Most High, right?
We got girls,
and they want to do it. See, here's
and
the
they
thing.
Wanna do it.
They want to do it. Oh, they looking for someone to talk to them and tell them. That's why I walk this community. That's why I do what I do, because they looking for someone to tell them, my brother. They looking.
Yeah. And they're a testimony to others. We just had a brother in our group. He made they did an interview on him, and he was explaining, you know, the things that he went through, gang banging and all that kind of stuff, and then he changed his life and became a Hebrew. You know what I mean? So it's a beautiful thing, because we're transforming our women from harlots, dressing like harlots, showing all their body off, walking around, having sex with everybody, to being modest, spiritually and the outward modesty. You know what I mean? Changing their appearance, changing how they look, changing the way they conduct themselves. We having fathers have to stay with their mothers and stay with their children, stay with their wives. You ain't leaving your wife no more. You ain't leaving your children behind. You gonna stay right here, and it's a lot of us that come together and encourage them to stay, even though it's hard, even though they coming against you. The world feel like it's coming against you. We gonna do this together. We gonna work this out. The Most High is with you. We with you. Let's do it. So right
Amen.
Now we're getting ready for Tents of Tabernacles, where we have to sleep. And tents for 7 days, it's a representation of us being in the wilderness and being tested by Satan and being able to defeat him in all of the things that he throw out at us, right? And then being able to see the power of the Most High with us being in the wilderness. Remember, he fed them. He made sure that they had quail at night and bread in the morning, right?
Amen. My brother, listen. You got 2 minutes. Tell us what you want everybody to know. I got to bring in my good friend Belinda Brown, and tell us what you know. Hey, it was a tremendous conversation today, and I tell you, you have enlightened us, and it's always a pleasure. But you tell us what you want, because you got 2.5 minutes to say it.
All right. I just want to encourage all, if it's any ministers out there listening, to change the game up. The Most High needs you. Your community needs you. Change it up, man, so we can start changing our community. Understand what this Bible is really saying. Know that we are a part of the Bible. We are called the children of Israel. We are chosen above all nations of the earth, and our job is to preach the gospel to the whole world so the whole world can come back to the Most High. But we got to come back first. Our praises to the Most High. Thanks again, Pastor Pickney, for having me on. We're doing Tents of Tabernacles out here. If anybody is doing it, I want to say have a good and a blessed Tabernacles these next 7-8 days. And I just want to say all praises to the Most High. And thank you, everybody, and y'all have a blessed one.
Amen. That's my good friend, Malak. My brother. Hey, listen, I know what you're doing out there, and really, really appreciate you. Love you, and stand with you all the time. Not some of the time, all the time. And you're my brother. Love you, love you, love you. Thank you so much for coming on. And listen, anytime you feel like talking, you're always welcome. So let's
all
talk
right,
soon.
Man. Y'all stay blessed. Everybody stay blessed out there.
Right, my brother. All right. That was my good friend, Malak, from beautiful California. Now I got to bring in my good friend, Belinda Brown, from Louisiana. Louisiana, Slidell, Louisiana. Belinda Brown, are you there?
Yes, I am, Pastor Pickney. Woo! Y'all been having a very hot topic. I've been enjoying listening. But I do have a question about it, Pastor Pickney.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
You know, I just listening to you and the Hubie boys, I mean, it's such a very, very sensitive topic, but it's very sensible because of the fact that our churches and the people of God is in such a critical state. And my question is that, you know, the credibility of the church is almost unquestionable because of the fact that it's been so compromised,
uh-huh.
you know, and my concern is that we as a people of the Most High, how, you know, I guess I got to ask this question to the Hebrew boys. I hope they're still listening. You know, what is it that we can be doing right now to bring some type of restoration or restoring that integrity back to the church or back to the people of God, where we can, you know, get our young people to listen to us? Because it's not good right now, Pastor Pinckney. I'm telling you, it just,
oh,
you know,
I know exactly what you said. So listen, let me have the Hebrew brother come in and speak on that just for a second.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. I'm listening. I want this topic to go farther because, see,
right.
we're trying to change this generation and we're not getting no respect.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear
Hello?
Her question? Go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead, Glenn.
I heard
the question,
and that is a very, very good question. That's what's taking place right now. It's us coming back into what is this Bible really saying? What does God really want us to do? And so when we find out what God really wants us to do, who we really are, and how we get the young people to listen, because, man, we got a lot of young people in our group. Our group is basically young people. We have some young ministers. They probably around 22, 23, and they just stepped all the way up. They be pushing me out the way like, no, I'm doing it now. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay, go ahead. Now, the way that they listen is because they're getting their identity back. Like, if we don't really know who we are and what our purpose is and why all this stuff is happening to us, we can't function. You just lost. You just like, well, we can't really know the mission at hand. So the Bible says that in Deuteronomy chapter 30 that we got to start teaching. We got to get back to the commandments, start teaching our children the commandments, and then that's how the restoration comes. That's how we get delivered. So this is all Bible prophecy for us coming back to the Most High, and we're rising up, and then that's what's going to make Christ come back, if that answers your question.
Well, good. Right. You know, I like that question, but, you know, it go back to when I first met Pastor Pinckney. You know, one of the things that inspired me and that, you know, that I really admired about him was that it was his unconditional love towards people. You know, people he didn't even know. You know, I remember when we used to have the meetings at the library, Pastor Pinckney, and, you know, there was, you know, homeless people at those meetings. There were people, you know, poor people. I mean, people that were beat down and trodden. And, you know, you lifted those people up, Pastor Pinckney. And, I mean, they would just flock to those meetings. And there was just something that they were drawn to you. And I realized that it was the unconditional love that you had towards those people. That's why I can't resist calling you pastor, because a true pastor is a shepherd that, you know, that have the heart for the people. And that's something even before, you know, I admired that about you. I know you was, you know, really, you know, powerful in your activism and, you know, and all that other good stuff, you know, the rallies and the protests and all of that. But to me, you was a genuine shepherd that I would, you know, call pastor, because, you know, my mother was not a churchgoer. You know, she believed in God, but she just did not believe in, you know, a lot of the fakeness and phony, you know, leaders and stuff. So when she first met you, she was like, that's my pastor. You didn't even have a church.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right.
And, you know, let me say this too, Belinda, because one thing that's important to me, you know, I think the biggest thing that I had going, and I think if you're a man of God, I can't care whether people like me or not. See, I can't mm-hmm. walk around mm-hmm. here and talk about, you know, well, that person don't like me, I can't help them. And to mm-hmm. me, that doesn't mean anything. What do that mean, somebody like you or stuff like that? I think that if you're on a mission, see, nothing supersedes the mission. I don't care what it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a man of God, God has laid out a roadmap, and you got to follow that
mm-hmm.
roadmap right now. See, right now I'm doing something a little bit different. I'm training people now to be more
mm-hmm.
productive than ever before, and
mm-hmm.
they hate that.
Mm-hmm.
They can't stand
mm-hmm.
that, Belinda, because they figure that, you know, that where is he getting the money to do this? What's going on? How is it possible for him?
Mm-hmm.
How do we get teachers to come
mm-hmm.
in and do this? We got to stop those teachers from coming in and working with Pastor Bean, because he's making us look bad. And I say this
mm-hmm.
all the time. I'm sick and tired of these poverty pimps in my community, and that's what's destroying
right.
the community. But the point is,
right.
we allow it. People won't stand up and say no more. So, you know,
right,
that
Pastor,
note.
You know, I got to say this, because when you begin to lift the oppression off of the people and you begin to deal with the issues that was holding the people down and making them hopeless, they were just drawn to you. And this is what they hate. They hate the fact that, you know, when people like yourself and me come in, and when we come in with a whole different spin, it's to expose them, to expose, what you say, the poverty pimp.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know,
they pimp it without a license. That's what they call them.
Well, you sure got that right.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying having this conversation. I know we're running out of time, and you know, but I really appreciate that, you know, you guys are having this type of discussions, and we gotta do more of this. We gotta talk about, you know, what it's gonna take to heal our people and bring them back to the state that God said He came to give us life, and give us life and that more abundantly. You know, and nobody is going to serve a broke down, you know, hand me down, you know, stump down Jesus that or God or whatever. They're not going to have anything to do with it. This generation will not have anything to do with anything that's dilapidated. Okay, so we got to show them, if we got the victory, it ain't just talking about it. We got to do something about it. And
absolutely.
I feel as though, Pastor Pickney, the Lord said He created us to rule, reign, and take dominion over everything. And if we're going to serve the Most High, then we're supposed to be in charge of everything. And that's the problem. We're going looking for help in all the wrong places, and letting
all
the wrong people be in control and in power over us, because they're crooks.
Yeah.
They're highway robbers.
Listen, Belinda,
tolerate that kind of foolishness anymore. We got to take our leadership back. We got to put our the right people in place that is going to stand for what's right. And then we got to build our own economic base. That's what
there
we got to do. We need money to do what, and God will bless us if we stop listening to all of these people that talk about what they're going to give us. We don't want them to give us nothing.
Just open the door. Hey, Belinda, look, tell us, you run for office down there. Tell us a little bit about that, because you only got about a minute or two, so go ahead.
Yes, Pastor Pickney, I'm running for office, and I know that I have something very tangible to offer to our St. Tammany Parish school system here in Louisiana. And I'm coming with an agenda. Like you said, when you're on a mission, there's nothing they can do about it. And that is to realign our curriculum and vocational training programs, you know, the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, you know, expanding those programs, identifying those children at an early age so that we can make them accessible to those programs so that, because, you know, this is their world, the world in change, and we cannot be educating our children like we was doing 50, 100 years ago. We got to bring them into the 21st century and get them prepared for the things to come, because the robots, who going to build the robots? Okay, who going to repair them? They talking about flying cars. Pastor Pinckney, I'm here to tell you, I know that every child that graduate from high school don't intend to go to college. We got to prepare our children for a future that they can be successful in. So I'm excited about that.
Hey, man, you said something. You know, they making machines now to eliminate the use, because I remember when it took 50 people to make one. Now you can make 50 cars with one person, and also now they got a machine now that can make parts. It's called a 3D machine, a 3D printer, I think they call it. And what it does, it's going to eliminate 1,000 jobs. We talking about one machine going to eliminate 1,000 jobs. That's really too much. But listen, Melinda, we have just ran out of town.
I would love to talk to some more about that, because that's serious. And I would love to come on the show next week, and so we can talk a little bit more about this advanced technology that's taking over the world, and our kids are not ready to compete with it. We got to do something about that, okay?
Let's do it. Let's do it. It starts with you and I.
Okay.
Y'all right? Talk. So, hey, I can't forget about Carl. So, also, I'm having my birthday. My birthday is October 27th, and I'm having a birthday party and here in Benton Harbor. Yeah, so it's going down from, yeah, so
of our birthdays in October. I'm October 5th, you Carl October 27th, and Carl is October 29th. So of our birthdays, you can't have your party. We got to come down there and party with you.
Come on, how you say it? It's going down. Let's do this.
Come on down.
Just come on down. Okay. That's what I got to say. I will talk to y'all soon.